The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
Small Biz America.
This is Making Business Work Better. And now, here's your host, Mike Miro.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Mike Miro with the Making Business Work Better radio program. And we're happy that you're with us today. Just hope everything is going well for you and your business in 2008. And our purpose here on this show is to help enable and inspire small business owners to take their business to the next level. And our purpose is to give you some information that would potentially help you solve a problem or inspire you with a new idea to get out there and really do some neat stuff with your business. And that's our purpose, and that's what we're after today. So thank you for joining us. This is Mike Miro. I'm your host. I am the growth coach in Dallas, Texas, and work with small business owners all over the U.S. To help them take their business to the next level and make their business work better. So, again, welcome to everybody. We're glad you're with us today. We've got a very special guest with us today. Dr. Nelson Simmons is a doctor in McKinney, Texas, and he has a very unique practice called Personal MD. And Personal MD has been around for about 4 years, and Dr. Simmons is the primary physician in that business. 3 years before that, he was involved in a more of a traditional family practice, and he's a graduate of Texas A&M, lives in McKinney with a wife and three kids. Nelson, we're glad you're with us today.
Thank you, Mike. Glad I could join you.
Healthcare today is one of those issues that is always at the top of the news, always at the top of the political discussions and things like that. Tell us a little bit about what Personal MD is all about.
Well, I think you're right. The healthcare is frequently cited as one of the primary concerns that any business owner, small business, medium business, small business, self-employed, this is a significant topic, goes right along with customers and, you know, trying to find the best bottom line, and it affects everybody. And what we have done at Personal MD is essentially introduce a new model of healthcare designed specifically for the small business and self-employed market.
Okay.
Our goal is essentially to provide affordable healthcare, but in a high-quality fashion.
Okay. All right. Tell me a little bit about how you do that. What makes Personal MD different than a traditional family practice?
Well, there's obviously a lot of details involved with the inner workings, but the basic principle is that instead of contracting with insurance companies to take care of people, we contract with the employers or the individuals themselves in the case of a self-employed person.
Okay.
And our function here is one where we have what I often refer to as having one master.
Okay.
Instead of working through the insurance companies and serving them because they're the ones who pay the bill there, we work directly for our client, and as in any direct service business, whether it's a restaurant or a dry cleaner or an auto mechanic, my approach to patient care and the details that we have to address, and in many cases, understanding the cost components there, are critical to the relationship.
Okay.
So it takes healthcare to a slightly more traditional business-like fashion, where I am now accountable to my client, the client being the patient.
Wow. What a novel concept. You know, there's so many times that people go to the doctor and it's kind of like you're doing the doctor a favor by going in their office, you know, and you feel like you're just a number, and you wait and you sit in the lobby and, you know, wait, you have an appointment, but you wait for hours and hours and hours to get in to see the guy. And then when they're in there, you know, it's kind of like, how fast can we get you out?
And so, you know, what,
a great idea.
Yeah, commenting on it from the inside, I used to be in a traditional practice, what I often refer to as traditional practice, where, you know, a doctor has many patients and it's based on the volume model.
Uh-huh.
And the problems that we encounter in that scenario is that there's a significant amount of overhead generated.
Yeah.
Because you have to have an entire billing department, and you have to have staff to essentially address each patient's concern. And then what most people don't realize is that for every one patient I see in my office, I handle about 5 to 7 on the phone.
Okay.
And so if I'm seeing, you know, 20 patients in the office, you know, I'm dealing with about 100 encounters per day.
Okay.
And so, you know, it can make for a real busy day, and the only way to really handle that is through addressing it with higher number of staff.
Okay.
And the last year that I was in traditional practice, and perhaps one of the driving forces was a study that I did on myself.
Uh-huh.
And I don't tell this story to many people, but I actually bought timers and I put them on the door. And as I entered the room, I was able to clock myself. And when I left the room, I stopped the timer.
Uh-huh.
And I found that all comers, every patient, start to finish over the course of a 2-week window, I spent an average of 7 minutes and 32 seconds in a room.
Wow.
That was from saying hello to writing my prescription to saying goodbye, shaking hands, and walking into the next room. And I really started to wonder how I was doing that.
Yeah.
And I came to the conclusion that what I now refer to as reflex medicine. I was hoping that that the patient would give me enough information and give me the answers to the questions in a way that I wanted.
Uh-huh.
That I could make a decision. And I felt that there was a better way. And as it turns out, you know, through my experience with my company called Personal MD, we're very happy. And there's plenty of companies across the country that use slightly alternative scenarios to what I do, but all of them experience similar outcomes.
Yeah. What tends to be the level of satisfaction of your patients now with your services compared to what you had in the traditional?
Well, that's a great question. You know, my personal feeling is that it's tremendously higher.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps the only way that I really have to measure that is what I refer to as patient loyalty.
Okay.
I think patient satisfaction and patient loyalty are two different things.
Well, I agree with you on that.
Yeah. I think the customer satisfaction or patient satisfaction, in my case, you know, I think people weren't necessarily unhappy with me as a physician in a traditional practice. You know, they
uh-huh.
could see that I was busy. They frequently had to wait. You know, I often entered a room saying, "I'm sorry for being late. How can I help you?" But the reality is that patients were, I don't think they were dissatisfied, and maybe they might not have been happy. And that's an element that you can often just put out questionnaires and say, "How was your visit today? Did the
sure.
doctor perform, etc." The other patient loyalty or customer loyalty part is much harder to measure.
Yeah.
And the way that I have come to the conclusion that my patient loyalty is much higher in this particular practice revolves around the idea that our turnover rate is lower.
Okay.
I find that our retention rate on our practice runs roughly at about 90% to 92% on any given month.
Okay.
And when we send out exit questionnaires to our patients, or what often we refer to as our members, when they are leaving our practice, the most commonly cited reason is, you know, revolves around the idea that they're moving
okay.
or the dis- distance was an issue. It was really never on the satisfaction side.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that's a very important thing to try to decipher is loyalty and satisfaction. But I would say it's higher just based on those numbers and what we've seen as a practice.
I think that's a good way to look at it because, you know, loyal patients, loyal customers will keep coming back and they will stay with you. But they, you know, the other thing that I found when you have, you know, a loyal patient base is they're also more than happy to refer people to you as well.
You're absolutely right there. That's our number one way that we generate new business is with the satisfied, loyal customer.
Okay. All right. And that's a great way to grow any kind of practice, whether it's
sure.
healthcare or a CPA or an attorney. You know, if you've got satisfied customers, satisfied clients, well, that word of mouth can really help grow your business.
Sure.
So you've been doing this for about 4 years, and what are some of the challenges you've had in taking this thing from a concept to where it is today?
Well, there are many. There are many, and one of them, you know, you're basically touching on when you're talking about satisfaction of patients. And, you know, when you're first starting a business, any business, it's difficult for people to basically understand what you're doing. You have to educate your customer, in my case, the community, on why I'm different, what's different about me. And it's not like an ice cream store where I can give out some free samples.
Yeah.
I was in the mall recently, and I was walking by, and you know, somebody offered a free sample of some sorbet or something along those lines, tasted awesome, bought a cup.
Yeah.
You know, you give out a simple sample, and, you know, I really don't have a lot of simple things I can give away.
Right.
Because most of the stuff that we have is personal. And,
right.
You know, healthcare is one of the most private, personally held things that we all have.
Right.
And so educating the public was certainly one of the biggest differences, and, you know, teaching you know, the people that are going to eventually turn out to be your customer or your patient in my situation is tricky, and you have to develop a plan to do that.
Okay.
And so that was really the first element that was difficult. You know, we put a traditional business plan together. We knew where we needed to be from a numbers perspective.
Okay.
So that we wouldn't be hemorrhaging money.
Right.
You know, when it all came down to it, but the nice part is that, you know, we were able to use, just like any business, a traditional business plan.
Okay.
And put that out there, and we had a 3-year growth plan.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I know that you know it's an important thing that you need to have long-term goals and short-term goals, and we had those.
Okay.
And then using, you know, in our case, we used a lot of print media to educate our public, and then, you know, we were fortunate enough with the uniqueness of our practice to be placed in some different major publications.
Right.
That are not of what I call the pay-to-play model.
Okay. Okay.
You know, the traditional advertising where you pay money to be, you know, featured either
right.
in an article or
right.
put your advertisement out there. Is what I call pay to play, and
sure, sure.
You know, once we had a slight name for ourselves, and we won some local accolades and so forth, then the Dallas Morning News did an article on our company, and you know, Fox 4 News came out and did a segment, and
yeah,
that really has gone a long way in helping us. So, growing the business was key. And then another component that was just a significant challenge, and this is, you know, can be applied to any business, but once we started realizing that we had a unique customer base, in our case, a self-employed person, a
uh-huh.
small business employee or a small business owner, we found that there were many things that we took for granted, that I took for granted, in a traditional insurance world that needed to be addressed in this world. A good example might be what medication to use. You know, in a traditional practice where insurance was paying the bulk of the bill and my patients had a copay, you know, I might choose, you know, whatever medicine was, you know, on the top of my mind. And in this particular scenario, we have to be much more cognizant of price, because, you know, my patients are directly paying for the product that I put out there or I recommend out there. And you know, the same is true for getting an X-ray or getting an MRI scan or an ultrasound or whatever the case may be.
Right.
We needed to develop a reasonable avenue for our patients, a low-resistance model for them to be able to do that. And once we were able to capture the understanding on what our patients needed, it made it much easier for us to work with them. And we've gone as far as to publish those prices on our website for them. And so at any point, they can log on to our website and open the price list and then see what their price tag is going to be for a service. And that's been a real, you know, a real win situation. In a traditional practice or in my other business, I would have never, ever dreamed that that was a need for my patients, because we never dealt with that. People, you know, wanted to know what their copay was. It never really had to do with the dollar amount. And so it's a unique challenge that was presented, and we quickly realized after we opened the doors of business that that was something we needed to be able to provide as a service to our client.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like to me that as you begin to develop your practice and you begin to have patients coming through, that you identified a real unique need for small business owners. Tell me a little bit about how you've kind of reinvented your practice to focus on their specific issues.
Well, I opened the practice in December of 2003, and after, you know, reviewing the data and looking at our patient population and what we needed to do, we found that there was a common thread amongst the people that were being attracted to our company for healthcare. And the common thread that we essentially drug out of the mountain of data that we were looking at had to deal with the fact that many of them were either self-employed or worked for a small company or either owned a small company, you know, maybe under 50 employees in size. And these people were essentially in a scenario where they either had no health care or they had a high deductible healthcare model, which were becoming very popular in 2003 and have continued to grow since then.
Right.
And so once we identified that, then we started to tailor our practice a little bit more towards that model.
Okay.
And talking to our small business owners and talking to our existing clients and what their needs were, we identified that they needed three things. They needed healthcare, primary healthcare services, which is what I offered through my practice. They needed medication support, which we went out and partnered with two major pharmacy lines to essentially care for our patients in the area.
Okay.
And we needed support from the medical community at large to help take care of the client whenever a scenario came up that was outside of my comfort level.
Okay.
And so whether that be a cardiologist to help deal with a patient that's having significant blood pressure issues, or an orthopedist to help me with a complicated fracture, or physical therapy for one of my patients who injured their knee. I mean, the list was extensive.
Okay.
And the relationships that I had developed in the community with my fellow physicians in those specialties really came into play here. And after visiting with them and telling them what I was doing, They were very excited to help, and we have subsequently developed what we often refer to as the Personal MD Network.
Okay.
Which is actually one of the components that we sell as part of our package.
Okay.
And it's interesting how that need developed into a huge selling point for us, but it's been a very important part of what we do, and it's come in handy. And I think realizing that I couldn't take care of everything was the first big step there. And I knew that. I mean, I'd been in regular practice long enough, and anybody who's been to the doctor sometimes realizes that specialists are involved.
Yeah.
But the tradition was, if you didn't have a standard coverage or a pretty little United Healthcare card or Aetna card or Blue Cross card in your wallet, you were in a, you could be in a pinch.
Yeah.
And so we were fortunate enough to find community doctors that specialize in those fields, people that I trusted with my own family to participate in our practice and to be people that we could refer to and offered pricing, affordable pricing to our clients.
So they were not resistant to partnering with you, but they welcomed the opportunity to partner with you.
Absolutely. It really brought them a whole new market.
What
happened is, because, you know, what was happening is that as a practice taking care of the self-employed and the small business people and people who directly paid for a large amount of their health care, we were now in a position where we kind of had a collective of these particular patients. And, you know, the cardiologist, you know, who had primarily focused on insurance at some point, you know, or throughout his career, now had a new market that he could tap into through our service, you know, by us referring to him. And it was someone that we trusted, and it's someone that gave us a beneficial pricing model.
Okay.
And the way that it primarily worked out is that whatever – you know, the insurance companies were paying him for a service, you know, roughly around an average there, something that we call the Medicare plus 15% model, is how we figured out price tags on that. But and essentially they would publish those to us that we would then pass on to our client.
Okay.
And whenever our client went there, they had an idea of what the price was going to be. And when they, you know, when they checked out at the counter, so to speak, they essentially paid for the service, and the doctor would collect his money then instead of 90 days later, as was traditionally known with the insurance market.
Yeah, and without having to battle the insurance company to get it approved.
Yeah, and you know, for our patients, it was a win-win situation, because for our patients, knowing what the price was going in made a big difference. And I'll give you a perfect example. A woman is supposed to get a mammogram anytime that she turns 40.
Uh-huh.
Okay, in some cases even sooner. But, you know, let's just say 40. And I found many a woman who had not gone to get a mammogram, or maybe got her first one and didn't go back to get follow-up ones. And the main reason was the fear factor revolving the cost of a mammogram.
Okay.
And what we did is, by telling them, Mrs. Jones, your mammogram is going to cost $110. And they're like, well, is that all it's going to cost? Or you know, or they'd say, are you sure that's all it's going to cost? I don't want to be getting bills 3 months down the road, and so forth. And yes, ma'am, it's going to be $110 to go get your mammogram done.
Uh-huh.
And they were then, at that point, once they understood the cost component, they have been more than happy to go get that, even if it required that they budgeted that out over a three-month window, for example.
Yeah.
And so that's been an exciting part of what, you know, we've been able to do here, because we've wanted to provide significant improvements in the health care of this particular population. And the end result is, through what our practice has become, you know, we now are helping people get the best health care that they deserve, and in an affordable way. And so our practice has kind of evolved into more than what I would have ever imagined it would have been.
Right, right. You know, one of the things also that's interesting about your practice is you give not just the great health care to the patients who come in, but you give small business owners an opportunity to offer something of a benefit to their employees when they may not traditionally be able to afford to pay for health insurance.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that wasn't something that we originally set out to do, but has evolved into part of our niche market, is what I call it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the studies are very, very clear when you look at the amount of companies that offer health care. And
right.
You know, I'll be the first to say that doctors, as a small company, are the worst to offer health care. You know, we don't offer our staff health care. And if you look at individuals and their families, employees and their families, you know, it's going to cost an average employer, you know, total of about $10,000 to $12,000 a year.
Right.
If you're looking at families. And so you have to figure out a way to divide that between the employee
uh-huh.
and the employer. And in most cases, the employer is generally the one who picks up a bulk of the cost. But
right.
as of late, you've seen the employer pushing a lot of that cost off on the employee.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've got clients right now that are, you know, in the past have been able to provide, you know, full health care for families that can no longer afford to do that because it's just become cost prohibitive.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that the health care market has gone that way. I take care of a daycare company that has 42 employees.
Uh-huh.
And in 2007, he offered a traditional health care option for his employees, primarily hourly workers with the exception of a few key employees, and only two of those 42 employees accepted the health care program. Only two were able to afford or felt they could afford that program. Well, in 2008, we restructured his entire health care benefit to include our program combined with the major medical model for catastrophic care, and we now roughly have a 50% participation rate in that particular company.
Wow!
So,
what a great story!
It really is, and you know, we're excited. But you know, you tell an employee it's going to cost you $5 a week to have primary health care, and you know they're jumping all over it.
Oh yeah!
And the employer is excited because in the end they're saving dollars and their employees are healthier, they're out less at work, and so forth. We charge $40 a month per employee to take care of them, and in many situations the employer picks up half the bill and the employer picks up half the bill.
Wow.
I mean, the employee and the employer split that, and so it runs about $5 a week for each. You know, compared to the traditional, which is, you know, significantly higher.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've got clients that are paying, you know, between $350, $400 just to cover a month, just to cover one employee.
Yeah, and that's very common. And you know, what you're seeing is less and less employers being able to offer it. You
right.
know, I don't even have the statistics in front of me, but it's in the neighborhood. Companies above 200 employees. Are very good at offering a healthcare option.
Right.
But once you drop below that 200 employee number,
uh-huh.
and if you're really looking at companies that are under 50, which is what we tend to focus on,
right.
there, it's rare to find a company offering a nice healthcare package anymore.
Well, I mean, it comes down to the economics of the deal.
It does. It's unfortunate that
yeah.
it comes to that, but
you know, because a lot of them, you know, especially when you get down in the lower end, if you look at the percentage of businesses out there, you know, I think the small business government organization, you know, defines businesses as or small businesses as below a certain amount of revenue or 50 employees or 25 employees or less.
Yeah. But
if you look at organizations that have 25 employees and they have to provide, you know, some type of health care coverage just to be able to attract and retain, you know, those employees in their business, you're talking about a significant hit to their bottom line.
Sure, sure.
You know, and it actually can you know, the solution you're offering can have a dramatic impact in their competitive advantage.
And I think it does, and you know, there are certainly key employees that, you know, you want to be able to offer the moon to. You know, you're a small employer, I'm a small employer, and I know that I'd give the shirt off my back for one of my employees if they needed it.
Sure.
You know, if it was within the realm of reason, I'd want to help them. I want to be the best employer I can.
Right.
And
right.
If they're sick, I want them to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, it's hard to
just giving them an access point has been a win-win there.
Yeah.
The employee now has a place they can go, and the employer essentially feels like they're at least filling part of their obligation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think as we continue to see the landscape of politics and the landscape of healthcare change in the next few years, it's going to really impact the way that individuals, you know, access healthcare. And most of this has to do with the fact that the employer, up to this point in our, you know, since World War II, the employer has been the primary supporter of healthcare.
Right.
Before individuals.
Right.
And it isn't until recent that the individual employee or the individual self-employed person has been challenged with the fact that they have to go out and find something affordable that they can pay for.
Yeah.
And,
well, and I think you've got a great solution, especially for, you know, single person businesses, you know, self-employed professionals out there who don't have an opportunity to be part of a larger group, you know,
right,
who have to get out there and they've got to provide health care for them, at least a certain level of health care for themselves and for their families while they're growing their business.
Right. And, you know, I try to tell all of our members when they come in and I meet with them for the first time that there are some pretty significant shortfalls that my company doesn't cover.
Uh-huh.
And those need to be accounted for in some form or fashion.
Right.
But 95% of the needs that they will have over the course of a year can be handled through the program.
Okay.
And hopefully that other 5% we never have to see.
Sure.
You know, we never have to walk in the doors of a hospital. And with as many private facilities that are open now for x-rays and MRIs and even surgical centers, for that matter,
right,
you know, we can now have a point where we can negotiate directly with another person. When you're trying to work with hospitals and so forth, they are bound by contracts and they are bound by their board and their whatever the case may be.
Right.
But and it's difficult to negotiate with them, you know, to beforehand. It's difficult
to
go in there and get a price tag beforehand because healthcare is complicated.
Right.
But when you're working with private facilities, it actually isn't as difficult. And I encourage anybody, whether they're a part of my business or whether they know much about it, to openly talk about price with their, you know, with the people who are providing service for them, because in most cases there is some room for negotiation there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like to me, Nelson, you've hit upon a very nice solution to several of the major issues. That is, trying to have some type of healthcare solution for, you know, business owners who can't afford it, you know, people, individuals who can't necessarily get on a healthcare plan because they don't meet the number of participant rules or even they have some pre-existing condition rules that keep them from being able to get into some healthcare things. And but it also sounds like that, you know, for the majority of the things that an average person would deal with, you can handle it there in your office.
We do. Our referral rate outside of our office, so out of the four walls of our office, only 8 out of every 100 people have to see. So 92 out of every 100 problems we can handle directly in our office, our referral rate is pretty low. The national average runs somewhere about 14-16%, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so we're certainly below average, and part of that has to do with the fact that the way we've structured our office by choice is that we allot ourselves more time to deal with our members.
Talk to me a little bit more about that, because that's one of the things also I think that not only, you know, your approach to your practice and with working with small business owners, but talk to me a little bit about the patient experience. I think that's one of the unique things about you as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I know that, it's important as a patient not to feel like it's a problem, especially when you're not well. Nobody likes to, you know, to go somewhere and then be treated like garbage. And I'm not saying doctors do that on purpose, but unfortunately, experience in most offices, you know, is exactly that. You know, doctors traditionally run behind, and we almost do that on purpose from a scheduling perspective. We double book and triple book appointments, and, you know, if you happen to catch them at the wrong time, you can end up waiting significant minutes while you're there. I remember getting a bill from a lawyer because his time was so valuable. When I was in regular practice, he sent me a bill for 1 hour of his time that he waited in my office for an appointment.
Yeah.
So we made a purposeful decision on the very onset of our practice to be much more in tune with that element for our patient. And the main way we did that was never double booking an appointment. So if Mike Miro has a 9 o'clock appointment in my office, you know, he's the only one that has that 9 o'clock appointment.
Okay.
And there's a risk to that, because if Mike Miro doesn't show, then I suddenly lose business.
Right.
But on the opposite end, if Mike Miro does show, then we have a very satisfied customer.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's elements there that you have to account for.
Right.
And in traditional practice, you know, I was very well known for saying, if I have 3 9 o'clock appointments, one will be early, one will be on time, one will be late.
Uh-huh.
And so you plan for that in regular practice, and if all of them show up on time, then you're in trouble.
Right.
And you get 30 minutes behind in a heartbeat.
Somebody's going to be waiting in the waiting room.
That's right. So and it's always uncomfortable when two patients show up and they both have the same time.
That's right. It's like, wait a minute.
You're the 9 o'clock, I'm the 9 o'clock.
So. Yeah, that's right.
So we try to put a little bit different spin on that. And the reason we can do that is because I'm not necessarily reliant on the face-to-face encounter to generate the revenue. By having a membership model, our patients, you know, we're making the majority of our profit margin on the month-to-month membership, and then when the patients come in, we can focus on them and do what we do best, which is take care of the patient.
Right.
And so we're not necessarily reliant on the face-to-face encounter, and that gives us a lot more freedom, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, we see patients when they need to be seen.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there are many situations where someone might call me and say, hey, this is the problem I'm having. You know, can you call something in, or can we try something over the phone first? Or what's very popular in today's world with the more techno-savvy patient is for them to shoot me an email and say, you know, Johnny's sick. Here's what he kind of did last night. Do I need to come into the office, or is there something else I can do? And either by keystroke response or by calling them back or consulting on the phone, we now can add that element to care for the patient. And if they do come in, it's a positive experience, because they essentially have their 9 o'clock appointment. They show up at 9, they're seen. I only see one appointment every 30 minutes, and the end result is that they get a lot of face-to-face time with me. And if they happen to have a second or third problem, we can address those while they're there instead of making them come back.
See, I think that just creates a whole different experience for the patient, because, you know, if you go back to your traditional model, I think people go in with the expectation, I'm going to have to sit here and wait.
Sure.
Because that's what typically happens. And I mean, that's consistent at the hospital level to the individual practitioner level. But, you know, I think you gain points and again, going back to that issue of loyalty you were talking about earlier, I think you gain a degree of loyalty because you're just treating people with a reasonable level of respect of their time.
And that's been such an exciting part. I don't feel sick to my stomach walking into a room because I know that Mr. Jones waited 45 minutes. He had a 9 o'clock appointment. I walked, you know, and doctors are human first, and I think any doctor who says, "Well, that's the way the ball bounces," I think they're lying.
Yeah.
Because all of us, you know, have been on the other side of that coin.
Sure, sure.
You know, all of us have been upset. I remember that I had to go see a dermatologist for this growth on my finger. It turned out to be a wart, but he needed to cut it off. And I'm sitting there in the waiting. I mean, I'm sitting there in the exam room, and I could hear the doctor kind of outside the door going back and forth busily, and then all of a sudden, you know, you hear a bunch of laughter, and then you hear him talking to a drug rep about something or another, and I'm like, "Hey, man, I'm in here waiting, come on."
Yeah, really.
You know, and it's not like he was hiding it or anything. It was just, it was right there, and he's already 30 minutes behind, and it seems like there's many scenarios out there. And I've been a patient, and, you know, as a doctor, I try to respect my patients, and it's sometimes out of your control. I mean, as a physician, it's sometimes out of my control.
Sure.
And unfortunately, there's still a scenario or two where I have to walk in and say, "You know, Mike, I'm sorry I'm late today," or as I'm walking by a room, say, "You know, Mike, I'm running late. Let me get you a bottle of water, and I'll be with you as soon as I can."
Right.
But, you know, I think acknowledging the patient, and for most of the people, they understand that that's not our norm.
Right.
There's going to be scenarios that come up because medicine is not a fine art, and we can't, it's going to take us longer to do some things than others that we didn't plan for.
Right.
So...
Well, Nelson, it just sounds like you're breaking paradigms on a lot of different fronts. I mean, the fact that you're doing the things that you're doing with your practice that so flies in the face of traditional healthcare offices, as well as the solutions that you offer small business, as well as the patient experiences. It's exciting to see. Not just a doctor, somebody who is, you know, helping people, but more importantly, a savvy business person. You know, a doctor as a savvy business person, because there's a lot of them out there that really struggle with that. And I want to tell you, I'm impressed and congratulate you on the success you're having.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, whether it's doctoring or whether it's any other business, you know, I think the lesson that I've learned is that you have to be fluid as you put out your plan out there, and we have our mission, you know, better healthcare, in an affordable manner is our mission.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you just have to be a fluid and adapt as the scenarios come up and constantly listen to your customer base.
Right.
And find out what's important to them, because they're really, in the end, the most important part of the business.
Yeah.
And being able to, you know, making sure they're happy. And, you know, in my situation, they're not going to need me every day.
Right.
You know, they're not going to come in every day for a problem. But when they do need me, you know, I need to be there. And
right.
The experience needs to be a positive one.
Yeah.
So that... You know, the next time they need me, it makes it easier for them to go in, and you know, they just are able to make the commitment to come in a little bit sooner because they know they're not going to be waiting 30 minutes. It's not going to cost them a day off work. You know, all those scenarios come in, and so whatever business you're in, you know, you have to be fluid and adapt as the situation changes slightly. It has been one of the lessons that I feel I've learned over the last 4 years as I've started this practice.
Right, right.
And perhaps the last lesson, you know, and I can talk forever about it, but is, you know, to be willing to take a chance if you believe in yourself and you believe in something that you can do. And it's risky, and it's, gosh, it's been risky to do that. And, you know, I'll never forget the day I told my wife that, okay, I'm going to turn down the partnership, and instead of getting that raise, we're going to go into debt.
Oh, my.
More, and, oh, by the way, you're not going to get a paycheck for 9 months. And
oh, yeah.
You know, and she's sitting there with a smile on her face saying, what? But yeah. She's been an awesome supporter.
Yeah, like what are you smoking?
You know, you're gonna run. You gotta really plan it out. And
yeah, yeah.
Sure
that's a tactical conversation, right?
Well, you gotta just make sure that your business plan is sound and that.
Right. That's exactly right.
You know, you gotta make sure you've tried to think through a lot of the situation. And it's a great exercise. Putting a business plan together was a great exercise for me.
Yeah.
I had never done one before, and when I was really sitting down and conceiving this practice, my CPA sat down with me and he goes, we need to put a business plan together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, all right, well, let's do it. And so,
right.
You know, a couple of weeks later, after we did all the research, felt like it was a viable option and moved.
Well, I think, Nelson, I think you're onto something here, man. And I think you are raising the bar, I think, in the healthcare world. And I think as more and more people become aware of the model, you know, maybe there's hope that we can turn around this healthcare problem that we've got in our country of, you know, getting affordable healthcare to people who need it, and also making it affordable for people, you know, for small business owners to offer something to their employees.
Yeah,
so.
You know, I think there's so many applications to what we're doing, and we're currently working in the planning phase with a company of 220 employees, so moving into another market medium. But it appears that even that size company is still struggling with the healthcare option.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it matters whether they're a one-person shop or whether they've got 1,500 employees. Healthcare is one of the biggest issues that they face, and
sure.
And I think you do offer some very viable alternatives to the challenges that these folks are facing.
Well, we appreciate your comments. And
well, Nelson,
we've
kind of run out of time, so I hate to cut it short, man. We can sit here and talk about this for a while, but hopefully, you know, we've given some folks some ideas. Give us your website address.
Our website, our company name is PersonalMD, and our website is PersonalMDOnline.com.
PersonalMDOnline. So if you want to find out more about what Dr. Simmons is doing and his programs, feel free to visit his website and, you know, just check it out, because this can help alleviate some of the issues that small business owners face in trying to help your employees with the healthcare issues. So, Nelson, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're busy, and appreciate all the great comments and ideas that you brought out today.
And we appreciate you, Mike, and all your help in the past. And
well, Nelson,
for having me on.
We'll be in touch soon, and you know, good luck to you, and please, you know, keep moving on and keep being innovative in the way you approach this.
Will do.
As we wrap up our show today, I want to just remind all of our listeners that there are many ways to solve problems out there, and as Nelson demonstrated in our show today, you know, sometimes innovation is one of the things that we need to implement to begin to find some of the solutions to some of the things. So I want to encourage all of you to get out there and put on your innovation cap, and not do the things that we're seeing in the IBM commercials, you know, where people talk about it but never do anything. But really think about ways that you can get creative to separate yourself from your competition and deliver those services in a way that will create that customer loyalty, that patient loyalty, those customers who will keep coming back and keep doing business with you, as well as tell others about your goods and services. So anyway, I hope everybody has a great week, and thank you for listening, and we will talk with you next time on Making Business Work Better. Have an awesome rest of your week.
Thanks for listening to Making Business Work Better. To find out more about Mike Miro or to subscribe to this podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.